Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is the United States versus Fuji. Mr. Whitney?
May it please the court. Instead of using an official interpreter, the government chose to use a Korean-speaking Korean Airlines employee to translate Mr. Fuji's sworn interview from English to Japanese and from Japanese to English. It is undisputed that that employee's English skills were so deficient that he could not even conduct the most basic tasks in this country without English-speaking assistance. The government's own interpreter admitted that he often had trouble understanding English at work, that his English was so poor that he could not go shopping on his own at places like Target, that he got so confused when trying to speak English that he mixed up concepts as basic as the difference between yes and no. The government's proof at trial depended entirely on that employee's translation to prove that Mr. Fuji acted for the purpose of private financial gain in coming to Chicago. Because these translations were wholly unreliable, and because the government did not present any other evidence that Mr. Fuji acted for the purpose of private financial gain.
Well, Mr. Whitney, what do you make of the fact that the Korean airline employee was able to relate that, quote, mafia story that had been given in 98, apparently accurately? I that doesn't suggest everything else was accurate. But, I mean, doesn't that give a little weight to his in translation?
I don't believe it does, Your Honor, for the following reason. Inspector O'Neill was the one typing the English into the computer. Inspector O'Neill, at the time of the second sworn statement, had information about the prior alien smuggling in Detroit. He was the one who put the English words in the computer. We can only have confidence that those English words represented the words of Mr. Fuji if we have confidence that Manki Ha, the Korean Airlines employee, had the ability to understand and accurately process the English presented by Inspector O'Neill, and the ability to reliably translate that back to Mr. Fuji so Mr. Fuji could verify if that was in fact accurate. We know from the employee's own testimony that he was confused and could not understand basic concepts about the interview. The government relied in very heavily at trial, at least, on the portion of the sworn statement in which Mr. Fuji purportedly said it was his purpose in coming to this country to assist the Singapore man. When the government asked Mr. Ha at trial, did Mr. Fuji use the word purpose? Their own interpreter said, I can't understand purpose. I don't know what that word means. The government's own interpreter admitted he didn't know, he couldn't understand the central concept of the interview that he was supposedly translating. Yet the government insists that that employee's translation are reliable and sufficiently reliable to constitute proof beyond a reasonable doubt. The record does not support the government's claims. The record clearly establishes that the translations were wholly unreliable. Mr. Ha's own employer would not use him to interpret English from Korean, his native language, into English for its own customers.
Did the trial judge instruct the jury that it was for them to decide whether Ha's translation was credible and accurate?
The judge did so instruct, Your Honor.
All right. And secondly, then are you suggesting to this panel that we overturn the jury's finding that Ha's translation was less than credible? The jury's finding?
Your Honor, I don't believe it was a question of credibility for the following reasons. The testimony with respect to Ha and his ability to...
Credible and accurate.
Correct.
You can't understand something, you can't make any finding. Can you? The jury couldn't make any finding. And wouldn't it be logic that they would come back and ask the court, we can't understand it, after the case was presented to them?
What we're asking this court to do is to apply the constitutional requirement that every element of the offense be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. To constitute...
We understand, but that's not what I asked you.
The jury's finding if they did so find, that Ha accurately translated, is not supported in the record. So yet, that finding should be overturned because there is not sufficient evidence in the record to, one, find that Ha's translations are accurate, but secondly, Your Honor, even if this court were to credit Ha's translations and the jury's finding as accurate, the government would still be required to present substantial independent evidence to corroborate the essential facts purportedly admitted by Mr. Fuji during the interview as they were conveyed by Mr. Ha. The government did not present any independent evidence to corroborate the essential facts contained in Ha's translation of Fuji's second sworn interview. They didn't present any evidence that Mr. Fuji was paid, that he was expected to be paid, that he was promised to be paid. The government did not present any evidence from the material witness, the individuals who were smuggled here, that they paid Mr. Fuji or expected to pay Mr. Fuji. So this record is devoid of any corroborating evidence, the kind of corroborating evidence that is required by the Supreme Court's decision Smith, Calderon, and this court's decision in Fern.
Now, he traveled here under a false passport?
That is correct, Your Honor.
With a disguise?
With a disguise?
Right.
I don't know if there was a disguise. He certainly traveled under a false identity.
He bought consecutive, he himself purchased the consecutive tickets for three Chinese nationals?
Your Honor, I don't believe the record supports the finding that Mr. Fuji was the one who purchased the tickets. What the record indicates with respect to the tickets is there were at least five individuals who were ticketed together through Saigon Travel Agency. The government has completely ignored.
Now, isn't that pretty good proof that he aided these aliens in coming over here?
It may be proof, Your Honor, that he aided the aliens, but it does not constitute proof beyond a reasonable doubt that he aided them for the purpose of private financial gain. And that's the critical element at issue here, and that's the element for which the government presented absolutely no proof at trial.
There were three counts. You're not contesting the forgery and false use of a passport count, are you?
That is correct.
What was the sentence received as to each count? Wasn't it 36 months as to each count?
It was 36 months as to count one, because count one required a three-year mandatory minimum sentence, and I believe all the counts then were run concurrent to that. So count one is the critical count in terms of the sentence, because it provided the statutory minimum.
Well, I'm looking at the J&C, and it says the defendant is hereby committed to the custody of the United States Court of Prisons to be in prison for a total term of 36 months on counts 1, 2, and 3.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But you're saying suppose we took your position and eliminated counts 1 and 2, 3, which is a forgery, he still wouldn't be subject to 36 months imprisonment?
He would not, Your Honor. He would be subject to an ordinary guideline sentence under either counts 2 or 3. That would be substantially less than the three-year sentence that the court imposed.
How much less, you know?
At least a year less. I believe the guideline range was around 2 years.
So you're talking about 24 months.
I believe so, Your Honor. Getting back to the travel records themselves, what they indicate and what the government has ignored in this case is that another individual was ticketed with these Chinese nationals. Another individual checked in at approximately the same time and with the same check-in agent as the Chinese nationals. Another individual sat with one of the Chinese nationals and escorted that Chinese national from Seoul to Chicago. The testimony of the government's own witness was that the travel records of that fifth person were more sophisticated, had been changed more often.
Well, didn't this man use the same argument 2 years before, the same story, when he got caught?
What the statement from Detroit says was that he admitted that he brought these Chinese nationals here, and he did so because he had assumed a debt to the Cambodian mafia. And
the
old
debt, $50,000 to the Cambodian mafia.
That is correct. And what Mr. Fuji said in Detroit, according to the statement, was that he was being threatened by the Cambodian mafia. And that is why he has agreed to assist the Chinese nationals here. And in fact, his girlfriend was also being threatened in Thailand. He then said, I also needed to pay back.
And this was a goodwill trip, you're trying to tell us. A goodwill trip to help those people out there having problems. And that's why he had the false passport. And he told the officers that it wasn't false.
This court certainly does not need to find that it was a goodwill trip in order to find there was not sufficient evidence. there is another logical explanation, and in fact, an explanation that is fully consistent, which was he was threatened by the Cambodian mafia and was beholden to the Cambodian mafia because of the debt he had assumed, and he had no choice because they were threatening him and his family in order to take this. That would not be private financial gain.
Mr. Whitney, do you challenge the trial judge's decision to let Ha testify?
We're not challenging that decision before, Your Honor.
Isn't that, or maybe it isn't, part of the problem here? I mean, if did he use a translator at trial, Ha?
He did not.
So I'm assuming that Judge Gottschall, yeah?
That's correct.
Made some assessment on his capacity to at least understand the questions presented to him and respond.
She said although his testimony was questionable and weak, she thought it was good enough under 403 to come in and be admitted.
Well, I meant just on the understanding aspect of it.
Right.
Yeah. So what weight should we give to whatever exchange occurred in at the trial between Mr. Ha and his questioners, both government and defense, as to the issue of his ability to understand and translate on the critical question of Fuji's testimony?
Your Honor, I think one has to differentiate between a couple of different things. One is the admissibility of evidence and the standard for that. What this court said in Fern, which is the cooperation requirement is separate and apart from admissibility. It's a different threshold, and it's a constitutional threshold when you, in terms of cooperation, because you have to establish proof beyond a reasonable doubt under the Due Process Clause. I also believe, in response to Your Honor's question, that the standard for allowing a witness to testify because they might be able to accurately convey is not does not establish they were sufficiently reliable and sufficiently corroborated to constitute proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
But if the testimony is reasonably close in time, in other words, the trial doesn't take place 2 years after the event, so that perhaps a language skill is developed during that period of time, and I don't have at hand just how close the event
was. About 8 or 9 months, Your Honor.
Yeah, and perhaps skills developed in 8 or 9 months. I don't want to take that point away from you, but it just strikes me that if he could even understand the minimal exchange of being sworn in and the like, that it might lend some weight to his capacity to have been an interpreter, accurate.
Even if he were found to be minimally reliable and his skills were sufficient to allow him to testify in court, that does not answer the question whether or not the government presented adequate cooperation. And I think the degree of reliability that we can assign to Ha is critical in determining how much cooperation we need. At best, Your Honor, it was highly suspect.
So you're saying your basic argument is that corroboration, if any, is light. And we have the questionable testimony, and that just falls below the sufficiency level.
Exactly. The Supreme Court has said in Smith and Calderon, when you have statements were obtained under suspect circumstances, that you have to require particularly heightened corroboration, and you must address the statements with caution and great care. And I don't think any reading of the record can support a finding of particularly heightened corroboration of the essential facts reportedly admitted by Mr. Fuji through Mr. Ha.
Want to save a little time?
I would like to, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Whitney, Mr. Mesa.
May it please the Court. The evidence in this case with regard to Count 1 included not only the circumstantial evidence, that is that Mr. Fuji's presentation of a false passport along with his age and the young Chinese women, it also included the evidence with regard to the airline tickets.
Can you talk louder, please, Counsel?
Yeah, I'm sorry. The evidence with regard to the airline tickets, which showed that they were issued sequentially, same day, same travel agent, and issued within a minute or two of each other. In addition, with regard to Mr. Ha's testimony, Mr. Ha was examined by the government in English for about an hour and a half, and he was cross-examined by Mr. Whitney for approximately 3 hours. During that period of time, he was questioned extensively regarding his ability to speak English, to speak Japanese, to understand Japanese, and to understand English. That was an issue, and that was within the jury's province to believe Mr. Ha's testimony. In addition, Your Honor, Mr. Ha also interpreted the waiver of rights form for Mr. Fuji, which is not being challenged on appeal. He also made certain changes to some of the statements that Mr. Fuji gave, that is his second statement, that were corrected by Mr. Fuji, which are also not mentioned and are not challenged on this appeal. With regard to Mr. Whitney's argument that Mr. O'Neill may have somehow consciously or subconsciously created or typed in the information that Mr. Fuji said in the year 2000, which confirmed or corroborated what he said in 1998 regarding why he was bringing these Chinese women, I think is what he's arguing, is that Mr. O'Neill was basically acting in bad faith, and there's absolutely no evidence in the record that when Mr. O'Neill actually found out that Mr. Fuji had a prior conviction, somehow his prior statement that he gave in Detroit appeared right there at O'Hare International.
How did Inspector O'Neill find Mr. Ha and his availability?
Mr. O'Neill was interviewing the defendant with the use of a telephone interpreter, and then at that time Mr. Ha showed up. Mr. O'Neill had asked whether there was anybody at Korean Airlines who could speak Japanese and who might be able to interpret. During that period of time is when apparently somebody from Korean Air tried to locate an individual. They knew Mr. Ha could speak and interpret Japanese and English.
Was there a problem with the phone interpretation, or was it just more convenient to have someone on site?
I think it was an issue of convenience, Your Honor, because Mr. Ha was there, and the interpreters that they use are from a service. All they know is their code, and I think Mr. O'Neill wanted and did ask Mr. Ha to go over that statement with Mr. Fuji line by line before he actually signed it.
Yeah, those interpreters, I assume, are government contractors, right?
They are contracted by the government, Your Honor, yes. Yes.
Now, to what extent was that telephone interpreter used?
I think it was actually she. I think she was used for the first approximately five or six questions on Fuji's statement number two. That is after he was it was determined that he had been previously arrested and convicted for encouraging aliens to enter the U.S.
Was there some sense of time urgency here that the government enlisted a private individual?
No, I don't think it was an issue of time, Your Honor. In fact, I think that this whole sequence of events took a time of a couple of hours. I mean, it wasn't like they needed to have it done right away. I think it was more of an issue of convenience. I don't think it was it's something that I believe the INS agents use or do while at O'Hare because of different languages that people speak.
They regularly tap the resources of various airline employees? Is that the practice?
They have done that. They have done that, Your Honor.
If I could touch on the question that I asked the defense counsel here. Assuming we would reverse the first two counts and send it back for resentencing, do you believe, under those circumstances, that those first two counts, at least the facts in them, could be considered in the resentencing as to the forgery and use of the passport? Because now we're down to reasonable doubt, or we're down to beyond a preponderance of the evidence, and rather beyond reasonable doubt.
With regard to his sentence, with regard to the passport?
If we send it back for resentencing on the forgery or false use of a passport, the facts with regard to the other two counts that would be reversed could be used in calculating the sentence on the third count.
I don't think they would be able to be used, Your Honor. Because
why?
The passport count under the guidelines is, I believe, a level 6, a certain level. And I don't think that he would be found not guilty of counts 1 or 2 would necessarily increase the offense on count 3 on the relevant conduct. I just don't think I think it would be considered as separate offenses, not to be
not available for use in that determining and calculating the sentence. Okay.
Right. Unless Your Honors have any other questions, we would ask that Mr. Fuji's conviction be affirmed.
Thanks, Ms. Wade.
Thank you, counsel.
a couple of brief factual points. Inspector O'Neill's testimony was clear that there were phone interpreters available for both the first and the second sworn statement. The phone interpreter actually only interpreted the first sworn, part of the first sworn statement, which is not, does not contain any of the relevant information. So the second sworn statement is all the work of Mankiha. The corrections that Mr. Mays referred to were also contained only in the first statement. There's no evidence in the second sworn statement that the words were corrected. Again, to have any confidence in the English words that Inspector O'Neill put in the computer in that second sworn statement, we have to have confidence that Mankiha understood those words, processed those words, and was able to reliably translate them into Japanese so that Mr. Fuji could verify their accuracy. Even if we find those words are reliable, the government has not presented substantial independent evidence, and the government has referred to none here today, to corroborate the essential facts admitted, the essential fact that Mr. Fuji acted for the purpose of private financial gain. The circumstances surrounding the three Chinese nationals coming to this country don't corroborate the essential facts admitted because the government ignores the existence of the fifth person, who one could have brought them, but also, too, even if Mr. Fuji had some role in bringing them, the government has not established that he acted for the purpose of private financial gain. The only evidence on that point are the literal words in English of Mankiha as given to Inspector O'Neill. And we respectfully submit to the court that those words are not sufficient by themselves to constitute proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
I assume you agree with Mr. May that if we reversed, as you ask us to do, counts one and two, the facts in those particular counts couldn't be used in resentencing on count three?
I would agree with that, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Whitney. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.